That highly specific sinking feeling that hits right in the pit of your stomach when you're on stage.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. I mean, for you, the budding or professional timpanist, you know the exact moment. You've spent hours locked in a quiet practice room. You meticulously cleared the heads, equalized every single lug, and got the tempering so perfect, the drums sounded like a resonant choir.
Yeah, a total acoustic triumph.
Exactly. You roll them out onto the stage for the gig, you sit down, the oboe gives the A, and you tap the 29-inch drum. And it just sounds like a cardboard box.
It's devastating. And it happens because the environment shifted. The
Yeah.
temperature under the stage lights is different. The humidity of a packed hall has spiked. And, well, the physical reality of the instrument has completely transformed.
It really feels like the drums are actively fighting you at that point. The pitch wanders, the tone is murky, the conductor is glaring at you, and you are sweating before the very first downbeat.
Yep, the classic nightmare scenario.
That is exactly what we are tackling in this deep dive. Our mission today is to extract the actual practiced wisdom, the daily habits and acoustic realities that will keep your drums stable, pitch-centered, and blend-ready in the absolute chaos of a real-world performance.
And to survive that chaos, we have to establish the non-negotiable rule that governs everything in this document. It sounds simple, but it is constantly misunderstood. Pitch and tone color are entirely different things.
Right.
They are completely distinct acoustic elements, and you have to treat them differently.
Okay, let's make sure we are crystal clear on the mechanical difference here. Because, I mean, I'm hitting the drum. Isn't the sound just the sound?
Mechanically speaking, no, not at all. When you strike a perfectly tempered tympano, you are generating a principal tone. That is your fundamental pitch center. It is the absolute foundation. But a vibrating membrane also produces higher partials and attack transients. Those upper frequencies, they dictate the tone color or the timbre.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like a house. The pitch center is the concrete foundation, and the tone color is the paint job.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, you can paint the house 50 different colors with different mallets, but the foundation shouldn't move.
Right, if the concrete foundation shifts when you change the paint color, the building collapses. In our case, if your pitch center wavers when you swap from a soft roller to a hard staccato mallet, your drum isn't properly tempered.
I see.
A well-tempered drum isolates that foundation so clearly that you can manipulate the color all day long without ever losing the pitch center.
But that foundation is standing on physical ground, which means we have to talk about the physical environment the drum is sitting in.
Absolutely crucial.
The source document gives us a pre-rehearsal stabilization checklist. And step one isn't grabbing a tuning key. Step one is letting the drums acclimate and ensuring they have what the text calls open air.
Yeah, the physics of a timpano are hypersensitive to the atmosphere because of what the instrument actually is. You have this massive volume of air trapped inside a copper or fiberglass bowl sealed by a plastic or calfskin membrane.
Right.
When you roll that bowl from a 65-degree concrete storage room onto an 80-degree stage, the density of the air inside and outside the bowl changes.
Wait, because temperature and humidity literally change the mass of the air.
Yes, exactly. It shifts the air loading on the membrane.
Air loading.
Yeah, air loading is the physical resistance the air provides against the vibrating head. When the temperature spikes, the air loading changes and the mathematical alignment of your overtones shifts. Dracs are even worse, by the way.
Oh, like an air conditioning vent.
Exactly. If an HVAC vent is blowing cool air across the head, the temperature across the surface is uneven. You're trying to hit a moving acoustic target.
Wow. Okay, that makes total sense for temperature. But the open air part tripped me up. Let's say I'm in a cramped orchestra pit. To save space, I shove my drums tight against a concrete wall, or maybe I put a plexiglass baffle right behind them. How does the physical proximity to a wall mess with the tuning?
What's fascinating here is that it actually doesn't mess with the tension at all. It messes with your perception.
Wait, really?
Yeah, this is where acoustics become incredibly deceptive. Timpani pitch clarity relies on the clean radiation of sound waves out into the room. When you push the bowl up against a hard, reflective surface like a wall or a road case, those sound waves hit the surface and bounce directly back at the drum.
So I've got the primary sound wave radiating out and the reflected wave crashing right back into it.
Which creates phase interference. Sitting on the stool, you are caught in an acoustic collision. The reflected waves might cause partial phase cancellations of your fundamental pitch, or they might artificially amplify weird dissonant overtones.
Meaning I, the player, am hearing a distorted, out-of-phase wobble. But if I ask the conductor or someone out in the 10th row, what do they hear?
They probably hear a perfectly fine, stable pitch.
Are you serious?
Totally serious. Because those localized reflections dissipate out in the hall. The danger is that the player hears the messy acoustic reflection, assumes the drum is out of tune, and grabs the tuning key. You end up mechanically destroying a perfectly tempered drum head to fix an acoustic reflection problem.
That is wild. The room is lying to you. So the rule is, give your primary playing channel as much open physical space as possible. Pull them away from the walls.
Exactly. Give them open air.
Okay, let's say we've done that. The drums are acclimated, they're in open air, we move to the daily checklist. How do we verify the drum is ready without blindly tweaking lugs and ruining our hours of practice room prep?
We start with the mechanism sanity check. That's step 3 of the document. You have to verify that the pedal holds securely, especially in the lowest register. If the pedal is creeping down because the internal spring isn't balancing the head tension, you stop right there.
Because if I try to tune a drum while the pedal is slowly slipping, I'm just chasing my own tail.
It is a recipe for absolute madness. Fix the pedal mechanism first. Once that holds, you perform the mid-range pitch stability test.
Okay, how does that work?
Bring the drum to a comfortable mid-range note. Strike it at your normal playing spot with a specific dynamic sequence, soft, 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 loud.
I was fascinated by this specific sequence. Why that dynamic curve? What are you looking for right after that loud hit?
You are listening to see if the pitch noticeably flattens or sharpens after the aggressive attack. A loud dynamic force is maximum excursion of the membrane. You are physically stretching that mylar or calfskin to its absolute limit.
It's like pulling a rubber band as far as it will go and then letting it snap back.
That's a great way to picture it. And when it snaps back, if the tension around the bowl isn't perfectly equalized, the head will settle unevenly.
Oh, I see.
If the pitch drops or spikes after the loud hit, it tells you the head was temporarily binding on the rim, or the lug tension is fighting the air loading, the foundation is unstable.
Okay. Assuming it passes the loud test, the document moves to the 4-point lug check.
Yeah.
And this is where I think a lot of players make a massive mistake. If I want to make sure the drum is clear, my instinct is to just go around the circle, tapping every single lug, trying to get them to sound identical.
And if you try to make every lug sound identical in tone color, you will inevitably detune the drum.
Wait, why? Shouldn't a perfectly cleared head sound exactly the same at every point?
Not in the real world. Small inconsistencies in the bowl's bearing edge, the collar of the head, or even the acoustics of the room mean the color will naturally vary slightly from lug to lug. The 4-point check asks you to test 2 specific zones. The primary playing channel, which is the 2 lugs bracketing where you strike, and the orthogonal channel, which is 90 degrees away.
And we tap those 4 points, listening only for the pitch center, the concrete foundation.
Pitch, not color. Exactly. If lug A sounds slightly brighter than lug B, but the fundamental pitch is identical, leave it alone. If you chase identical brightness, you will alter the tension, and suddenly your fundamental pitch will wobble.
This leads directly into step 6, the mallet reality check. Which is brilliant. You switch from your soft, fuzzy mallet to a medium, articulate mallet. The tone color obviously shifts. But if the pitch center wavers just because you change sticks, your tempering is off.
Right. The mallet reality check proves whether your foundation can handle the demands of the repertoire. If all those checks hold up, you are ready to play.
Which brings up an interesting dilemma. We know how to confirm the drum is stable. But where should we be setting the pitch? Because the source makes a very strict professional distinction between 2 things.
Yes, the MSR and the sweet spot.
Right. The manufacturer's suggested range, the MSR, and the sweet spot. I always assumed those were the exact same thing.
They are fundamentally different concepts. The MSR is entirely mechanical. On a spring-balanced timpani, there is a specific span of tension where the internal spring perfectly counteracts the pull of the head.
Okay.
If you operate within the MSR, the pedal functions smoothly, and the mechanism is safe.
So what does this all mean? It's like the MSR is the speed limit of a highway, but the sweet spot is your car's most fuel-efficient cruising speed. You want to stay within the limit, but find that perfect groove.
That is spot on. It's a mechanical safety zone. But just because the hardware is happy doesn't mean the acoustics are happy. The sweet spot is the specific, narrow region within that MSR where the physics of the bowl and the membrane align perfectly.
The acoustic goldmine.
Exactly. It's where the near-harmonic partials line up effortlessly, the drum resonates the longest, and the pitch speaks with maximum clarity.
So how do I find the sweet spot if it's not printed on a label somewhere?
systematically. You start in the mid-range, do the soft, 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 loud test, note the stability, then press the pedal up a whole step and repeat the test.
Okay.
Then drop a whole step below your starting point and repeat. You map the response. You will physically feel and hear a specific zone where the drum just wants to sing without you forcing it.
But what happens when the composer doesn't care about my sweet spot? Let's say I'm playing a piece that demands a terrifyingly high G on a drum that really prefers to sit around a D. I'm pushed to the extreme edge of the MSR.
When repertoire forces your hand, you have to make a calculated, intentional compromise. The source outlines two strategies for this. The bottom note strategy means you set up the drum's range so the lowest required note falls comfortably in a stable zone, and you just accept that the highest note is going to be choked and difficult.
And the alternative is the top note strategy.
Yes. Since the upper extreme is usually where the head tension gets precarious and the sound fails first, you prioritize anchoring that top note securely within the top edge of the MSR and let the bottom of the range fall where it may. You are choosing where to sacrifice resonance.
Okay, so we've mapped our sweet spot, or we've made our compromise. The concert begins. The hall is packed. 30 minutes in, the room temperature has skyrocketed.
The classic mid-concert heat wave.
Yeah, the copper bowl is literally expanding, the air inside is expanding, and my pitch is drifting sharp. If I touch the tuning lugs now, I ruin my tempering.
This is the moment you rely entirely on the fine tuner, sometimes called the master tuner. This is a mechanism separate from the pedal and the lugs.
Mechanically, what is the fine tuner actually doing? Because it feels like magic.
It's shifting the global tension of the entire head simultaneously. Without getting too bogged down in the engineering, it physically moves the entire spider mechanism or the base plate up or down.
Yeah.
It adjusts the overall tension on the membrane while perfectly preserving that delicate relative balance between the individual lugs that you spent hours setting.
It moves the entire foundation up or down without bending the steel frame.
That is exactly the function. But there is a massive warning in the text regarding this tool.
Right. I want to jump in and warn the listener here. The fine tuner is not a substitute for correct range setup. If you're using huge fine tuner corrections just to make the drum usable, you're outside the MSR and forcing the instrument.
Exactly. You're forcing the internal spring past its balancing point, and suddenly your pedal won't hold. Keep the fine tuner centered during your practice room setup so you have leeway to move slightly up or down during the gig.
That makes sense for managing the physical environment. But here's where it gets really interesting. There is a psychological environment on stage too. And the document highlights a massive pitfall, the brightness trap.
Oh man, this destroys more performances than humidity ever will. It comes down to how the human brain processes sound under pressure.
Break this down for us. Let's say we are in a massive aggressive passage. I've switched to a very hard wood core mallet. I strike the drum, and my immediate internal reaction is, oh no, I'm sharp, the pitch is way too high. But the document says I'm probably wrong. Why?
Because you are confusing brightness with sharpness. When you use a hard mallet or play it a fortissimo dynamic, you inject a massive amount of high-frequency energy into the attack. The tone color becomes incredibly bright.
The paint job on our house just got lit up with neon lights.
Exactly. And the human auditory cortex is easily fooled by that. We frequently misinterpret increased high-frequency brightness as a higher fundamental pitch. You hear that bright, aggressive bite, and your brain tells you the pitch is sharp.
So if I trust that instinct, what do? I panic, I reach down, and I lower the tuning.
You drop the pitch. The drum now sounds darker, less bright, so your brain relaxes. But you just lowered the actual pitch center. You are now playing flat.
Wow.
Yeah, you detuned a perfectly stable drum because you fell for an auditory illusion.
That is terrifying. How do we defend against our own ears?
Hierarchy and discipline. During your tuning and tempering phase before the concert, you must use soft, heavy mallets. Soft mallets minimize those high partials. They give you the purest, darkest read on the fundamental pitch.
You establish the foundation.
Yes, establish the foundation. Then, during the performance, you trust it. You choose your mallets purely for musical character, for articulation and projection, and you do not let the resulting brightness trick you into second-guessing your pitch.
Which brings us to the ultimate survival test. It is one thing to trust your pitch in isolation. It is another to trust it when 80 other musicians are playing around you. We have to talk about ensemble blend.
A perfectly tempered drum makes blending infinitely easier. A stable pitch center slots into the harmonic structure of the orchestra and holds its ground.
So how do I check that?
To verify your blend in rehearsal, you wait for a comfortable mid-level dynamic. You listen to how your principal tone interacts with the basses and the low brass? Are you playing octaves? Fifths?
And if my pitch is slightly off, I'm going to hear beating, that wavering, pulse-like acoustic clash between my drum and the trombones.
Exactly. Wait, let me rephrase that. If you hear beating, it means the frequencies are clashing. But if the pitch center is rock solid, that beating disappears, and the resonance of your drum actually enhances the low brass.
But what if the room is totally masking my sound during a massive, loud, dynamic passage? Let's say we are in the middle of a Mahler symphony, triple forte. The brass section is roaring, the strings are frantic, and the room acoustics are completely masking the decay of my drum. I hit the head, and the sound is instantly swallowed. How can I possibly gauge my blend?
You can't gauge the hall blend in that moment. When the masking is that severe, you have to rely on the direct sound. You lean in, you get your ear close to the head for a split second to verify that the foundation is speaking cleanly at the source. Then you step back and surrender to the ensemble.
You just have to trust it.
Good blend doesn't mean the timpanist can clearly hear their own instrument above a roaring orchestra. Good blend means your pitch center is so reliable that you stop hyperfixating on the tuning gauges and you dedicate all your mental energy to the rhythm, the articulation, and driving the musical line.
But trust has its limits. Sometimes the drum really is failing. How do we know when simple environmental touch-ups aren't enough? When do we grab the key into a full retemper?
The text gives us three definitive red flags. First, if you test the lugs and the pitch center is unstable at multiple points across the head, not just one slightly off lug, but systemic instability.
The foundation is cracked. What's the second?
A consistent double tone. This is a highly specific out-of-phase wobble. It happens when the tension is so uneven that two different sides of the head are vibrating at different frequencies, fighting for dominance.
It sounds almost like a mechanical tremolo on a single strike.
Exactly.
And the third sign, the text calls it the overbearing fifth, which sounds like a rejected title for a Beethoven symphony. What is physically happening there?
This is a fascinating acoustic failure. When you strike a timpano, you want the fundamental pitch to be the most prominent sound. But a drum head isn't a violin string. It naturally produces non-harmonic overtones.
Okay.
Proper tempering forces those overtones into a musical relationship. If the tempering completely collapses, the fundamental pitch weakens drastically, and the perfect fifth overtone takes over.
So I tune the drum to a D, I hit it, and all I hear is a screaming A.
Precisely. If that fifth dominates the sound, your fundamental has crumbled. The tension is severely uneven, or you force the drum so far outside its MSR that it can no longer support the principal tone. That is when you must stop, clear the head entirely, and start the tempering routine from scratch.
Let's pull all of this together. For the player out there navigating the chaos at the stage, this is your survival guide. You respect the environment, give the drums open air to prevent acoustic reflections from lying to you. You rely on the daily stabilization checklist, verifying the pedal mechanism before you ever touch a tuning key. You map the sweet spot within the mechanical safety of the MSR.
You rely on the fine tuner to manage the rising temperature of the hall without destroying your relative lug balance.
You separate brightness from sharpness, refusing to let hard mallets trick your brain into tuning flat. And you prioritize that pitch stability over color adjustments so you can confidently project your sound into the ensemble.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the goal of tempering isn't just mathematical perfection, it is artistic freedom. When you apply this rigorous, disciplined routine, you stop fighting the copper bowl and the calfskin. You remove the instrument as an obstacle, which allows you to actually make music.
It is about removing doubt. And that brings us to one final, deeply provocative acoustic phenomenon mentioned at the very end of the text. When you get this tempering absolutely right, and you align all those overtones perfectly, the pitch becomes incredibly robust. So robust, in fact, that it triggers something called virtual pitch.
This is where human biology takes over.
Right. The text explains that even if the physical fundamental frequency, the actual lowest vibrating wave of the drum, is mathematically weak, a perfectly aligned harmonic series will cause the human brain to synthesize the missing fundamental. The auditory cortex literally fills in the gap. It reconstructs the foundation in the listener's mind.
The drum implies the pitch, and the brain completes it.
So it leaves you with this incredible thought to mull over before your next gig. As a timpanist, are you ultimately tuning the physics of the copper bowl and the calfskin, or are you actually hacking the auditory cortex of the conductor in the audience?
It certainly reframes what it means to be a master of the instrument.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take these strategies, trust your foundation, and take these practiced words of wisdom straight to your next rehearsal.